I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is John Martin. John has led what can only be described as a life of extraordinary suffering, addictions, and loss, pushing him close to ending it all. His journey of trauma began at the age of 4 when he was hit by a lorry. His life spiraled into an ever-decreasing downward series of events, until he made a breakthrough after attending a Tony Robbins event. Watch this heartfelt interview to see how one man's struggle and battle through life has helped him go on to help others. John, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I've got to say, I am so excited to do this interview. I've actually been buzzing all morning since we spoke a few weeks ago. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Buzzing.
Buzzing.
Just, yeah, energy.
John, you've had an amazing life, and a life truly of so many different struggles and adversities. But I want to take you back. I want to take you back to really where it all started. Mm. And you told me that was the age of 4.
4 years
Can
old.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that and the start of the journey?
Right, yeah, 4 years old. 2 days after my brother's 6th birthday, I was 4. Month before my birthday. 4 years old. We were going to go to the park. Lovely day. We were going to go to the park. Yeah. And the front door was left open. My brother went outside to the front, went round the back. I saw the front door open and decided to go and see where my brother had gone while my mum was in the kitchen. And I went out, saw somebody across the road. So I got on my little bike, rode out, bang, hit by a truck.
By a truck?
Yeah.
Now, at 4 years old, you can't be that big. And you were hit by a truck.
Yeah.
I mean, how come you're still actually sitting? Yeah, you're still alive.
Tibia, fibia, broken. Femur, broken. Arm in 3 places. I'm fracturing my skull. And as you see.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
The scar, yeah. And I've got a large scar on my arm there as well. And yeah, and it's... I was in hospital for 5 months. I was in remission for 5 months. And I was actually born right-handed. I'm now left-handed because that's what he did to my arm. So I actually found this out of my auntie Jill. And it was a big change in my life. And
How did it change you? Because I guess at 4 years old, it's one of those that... I mean, did you have memories before that?
My first memory is getting up in the hospital bed and looking... wondering where my parents are in tears. So my first memory is trauma. So
and how did it affect your family? Because you said your first memory was of your family in tears.
Yeah. Well, I had my 5th birthday in hospital because I remember the 2 hippos in the kidney cake. Yeah, for my birthday, which, yeah, just a memory that came back then. Brilliant. But it affects us massively because my mum and dad got divorced about a year later, just after. My mum was an alcoholic anyway, and she was a very, very ill lady. And because of what I've learned with my life now, I suffered a lot of trauma. And I think because my mum and dad getting divorced, I must have suffered a lot of abandonment issues.
Yeah,
and the feeling of people walking away.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from divorced parents myself. And that was one of my big triggers, you know, the abandonment rejection thing. Even though, obviously, they're not rejecting you, that it's between them. As a child, you don't understand that.
Not at all. And the only memory that I've got from the hospital from then is my mum and I arguing. Just that one little snippet of mum and I arguing. And my dad just sort of, you know, restraining my mum because she's alcoholic. I don't know the story. So I felt the abandonment. And I chose from the age of 6, from learning by association from the age of 2 to 7, that must have really stopped me because it's trauma, abandonment, and just the lower end of the scale of consciousness. And it's so from that, it's sort of grew into a really bad child. And from
when you say a bad child, what do you mean by a bad child? Well, and that doesn't sound like a label that you might put on yourself. You're given that label, right?
I was given that label, yeah, because I used to go around Uxbridge Arcade getting a catapult, shooting people with them. I used to set fires all the time. I was a thief. I tried to burn. We had a big school field, and at the end of the field, there's a big car park. I got a load of leaves. I was the instigator, a load of leaves, dropped a load of stolen matches in and lit the leaves, and they burnt the fence down and lead into the car park. I would have been expelled from school at the age of 10, but I was moving up to Manchester about 4 months later. So And then the age of 11, I moved to Manchester.
And at this point, were you with your mum or your dad?
I was with my dad.
You were with your dad?
Yeah, my dad got full custody.
Full custody. Yeah. And did you see your mum at all?
Very rarely. I can't really remember much. I think I saw bits because I remember a couple of bus journeys going to see my mum. But my mum was a very ill person, always fighting alcohol addiction, addicted to prescription drugs. So very ill. And what I remember from going there, it was like I'd always just go there. Remember just then stealing cigarettes off her. Maybe 10, 11 years old and younger. I just remember my mum being an ill person, not being my mum. So, because I'm not sure if I ever knew to have a mother.
How do you feel now about your mum?
A lot of the stuff's it's big realisation, because I've gone through a lot of forgiveness. So a big realisation is the reason I was. My dad was the mum and dad, and he couldn't do that. So because he's having to work full time, and it's to realise that because of the abandonment and the fear that I went through as a child, it took me through into my future life.
And okay, so tell me about what was the next stage after that, after you were a bad child or labelled a bad child, and you were doing all these things, presumably for attention, because you wanted love in the end of the day.
Yeah.
You've been through this huge, massive trauma, your mother's left you, and you're being brought up with your dad.
Yeah. So, 11 years old, we moved to Manchester. So there's little Cockney John. I've walked into Broadalter School.
And I can tell you right now, from a northerner's perspective, we weren't the kindest to the southerners, for sure.
Yeah, so that's it, yeah. So I think I had two fights. Best mates now, but I had two fights in the first couple of days. And but because my brother was older, my brother was 13 months older than me, so he was 2 years above me in school. So with me being in the fourth year juniors, I knew people in the second year seniors. They were already doing the smoking, the weed and everything. And so I chose that route. I truanted on my last day of primary school to go and smoke weed.
So how old were you when you smoked? 11.
I was 11. Yeah. Okay. So, and then from the ages of 11 to sort of 15, 16, it was LSD, magic mushrooms, inhaling gas, anything to escape the reality, because my reality was related to trauma from when I was a kid. So why would I want to be in them sober times when I can get a hit of something in, you know, future that, or take a pill to be able to escape the reality from it, because I couldn't face it.
But it didn't just end with the LSD and the mushrooms and the weed, did it?
No, reaching 17, I've been taking drugs for 6 years by then already. Very rarely saw my mum because I chose the drugs. When I was 18, or maybe 17, turning 18, the last time I saw my mum, I found out I had another brother. So, which I'm actually going to go and see after here for the first time in 3 years. So, around 3 years.
Literally, you just found out that you had another brother.
Yeah, and my mum was forced to, my mum adopted when she was 17. And I think that's what led to her trauma as well. Yeah, so from that side of it. So I found out I'd got another brother. And then, and that was when I was 17. And then it was a year, well, not even a year later. I don't remember the exact times, but it was around a year later my mum passed away.
So you'd got to this point, what, 17, 18 years old?
Yeah.
And you'd hardly really known your mum. All you'd seen of your mum was what? She was an alcoholic and had left you.
The trauma life that she'd been through.
Did you get over that? Because, you know, where you are today, and obviously you can't say anything. Well, your mum's not here to say what you might want to say to her.
I've taken full responsibility for my own life now, 100%. I've forgiven everything that's happened during my life, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How have you, because it doesn't just stop there, and sorry, I didn't mean to you off track.
No, this is, I'm very solid. This is where it all began. The year after my mum passed away, Christmas Eve 1998, I lost my mum. I'll show you the tattoo after this. I lost my mum in 1997, December the 6th, 1997. And it was Christmas Eve 1998, I had my first line of cocaine, got half a gram. And that night, once again trauma, do you remember the Nokia 3310s?
They're like the brick things.
Yeah, I got bottled.
You're taking me back now. Yeah, I'm not that old.
Yeah, I got bottled. and had one stolen off me outside.
Literally, someone a broken glass bottle in.
Yeah, well, what it was I was on the phone. Friends and stuff were inside. I was on the phone. I was outside on the phone. Somebody said, "Can I borrow your phone?" I went, no, mate, I'm on it," sort of thing. Next minute, I've had it taken out of my hand. I've gone to get it back. I've been hitting the side of the face, smacked around the bottle from the other side, just off camera. So I basically spent Christmas Day, going through my mum's first anniversary on Christmas Day, bottled, having actually wet the bed because I drank so much as well in the hospital.
God.
And then that walk of shame in the morning sort of thing with stitches in my head.
And meanwhile, thinking about your mum.
Yeah, I thought I'd lost the year before. Yeah, And it's, and that was my process of starting to take cocaine.
And when you say you started to take cocaine, how long?
19 years. It was the September 15th of September 2017. So I started at Christmas Eve 1998. Wasn't all the time because I've gone through a lot of hypnotherapy and I've gone through a lot of other, and I've done a lot of traveling to get away from things as well. So, but my main thing was if I was in reality of normal life, I was a functional drug addict. So
when you say a functional drug addict, because obviously you hear people take drugs and I'm not here to judge or anything like that, but for recreational purposes, but you were taking it what, day after day?
I was on it to live on. Yeah, I used to have an argument with myself for 2 days just to let my nose get, because I used to be, I can't touch my nose, it was so inflamed. So just to get through it, the first 2 days I'd be like, right, instead of going seeing the drug dealer, I'll just go and post some money through his door and then leave a note saying I'll pay the rest over time. But then he'd be like, I could just have one line. And if I had one line, I'd spend a grand. I couldn't just have that one line.
You're chasing it. You're chasing that high.
I was working for 13 years, working probably 12 years, maybe 11 and a half years. Those was on nights, doing 12-hour nights.
And what were you doing at this time?
Putting cones out for roadworks, traffic management.
So presumably that's, you're putting cones out on the highway. Presumably that's quite a dangerous job.
Yeah.
And you're high as a kite.
I'm wired. Say if I started sniffing on a Wednesday and I've got a, put a job out on a Sunday night, I'd be turning up after no sleep.
Okay, so everyone that's seen those cones aren't quite in the line.
I'm very particular in what I do and very perfectionist in what, the wrong word perfectionist, but I've always been very focused in everything I do. If I'm a drug addict and a coke addict, I'm the best at it.
You're the best drug and coke addict.
Yeah, I used to put amazing jobs on and be very care with what I'm doing, but I'd be the first person to run across the road wired with a big sign on my side, when we used to be across the road. So I never had any fear or anything because I've always had the pinpoint bullet focus.
Do you think that was the drugs that enhanced that, or was that inside? Is that John inside?
I think the drugs were holding me back. I've always had it because if somebody said you can't do that, like, well, yes I can, and it must be subconscious. I've always asked myself, well, what if I could? So. And with the stuff that I did over the years of being a drug addict, people, you'd say, how have you done that? I mean, doing soul courses, marathons, putting yourself...
So you were doing marathons?
Yeah.
So, Simon, you were doing marathons. You were working on the motorways, putting cones out.
Mm.
Did you have a relationship? I mean, were you sustaining relationships?
Six failed relationships in 10 years.
I hate to say failed.
Failed 100% because of me. None of them knew that I was a coke addict.
They didn't
because
know.
I lied. No, I was. That's what I mean. I was functioning. I was doing it, and I was selling it for large parts of the time as well to pay for the habit.
So you were a dealer as well.
Yeah, I was on and off when I lived in Watford from 2002 to 2004. I went down there to clean and sober up, and this was the start of my steroid journey. I walked up to the biggest doorman in Watford, said, have you got any work? He went, whoa, you can have a job just for coming up to me and asking. So I got a door job. He said, start in 2 weeks. So I started on steroids. Within 2 weeks, I put the two stolen.
So you're on coke, you're only on steroids.
Yeah. And in the end, I was a doorman selling cocaine, selling ecstasy. I was a kitchen manager at a nursing home, so I'm a qualified chef. And all this, I was working 3 or 4 jobs wired, not sleeping.
John, how did you fit it all in? I mean...
Well, no time for sleep.
Well, I guess you weren't getting any sleep anyway, no. Obviously, if you take all the drugs.
Yeah. So, and it's just my life was, as long as I got the coke, I'd be fine because I was so functional. It took me 7 months to calm down when I finally, which is the next part.
Did you not, were you not ill during this time? Were you, did it not affect your health at all?
Well, I wasn't the person I am now.
Yeah.
So
no.
Maybe not my health, because I feel bulletproof anyway. From if a truck can't kill me when I'm four, then nothing can. And that's the mentality.
Actually, that's, you know what, that's amazing.
That's the thing of...
Because you should have died then, really. Like, you're a four-year-old,
four-year-old boy,
and you're hit by a truck.
Yeah, and hit me that hard, I broke my femur, hardest bone to break.
But you didn't die.
No. So this is why I'm here, and this is what leads to now.
So how did the breakthrough happen? Because presumably you're sober now. You've been sober, as you say.
Yeah, been sober for 2.5 years. But just to give people the view on how functional I was, I booked a hospital appointment to go and get a camera down my throat to see why I was getting really bad heartburn. I mean, I used to regularly go through 96 Rennies a day, you know, three packets of Rennies.
I know Rennies. My grandma loved Rennies.
Yeah, munching them like Smarties, yeah. And so I went to I got a quarter of cocaine for a group of us to go out on the Saturday night. On the Friday night, I had one little line of it. And then by the Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, I'm in the hospital after no sleep, doing the majority of this quarter of cocaine. And I've managed to blag the nurse that my pulse was racing so fast because I was nervous and I was anxious, but I was wired. And then I was going to the toilet every 10 minutes, having lines blowing my nose because just blood coming out of it.
Literally in between the nurse seeing you, you're in the toilet.
Then I'm still in the toilet. And small sort of waiting area, toilet just there. Everybody could hear me, but I didn't have a care. Didn't care about anything or anyone.
Just doing lines in there. Yeah.
So, and then I've actually gone in. I've actually opted to be put to sleep. I said, no, I want to be awake for it. So I'm wide awake, wired. Camera down my throat into my stomach to be told what I already knew anyway. All my stomach line was completely ripped from the amount of drugs I was taking. And then I left the hospital because I'd done most of the drugs that were supposed to be for everybody. I went and bought another one. So it was £1,000 from within 14 hours. I spent a grand.
What got you to that? I mean,
it was just a normal day of life for me. I've turned to everywhere I used to go because I was lonely in a group of people. So, and that's what people will feel. They won't realise it. They're lonely, and that's what they've got to escape from because they can't share the force.
Did you love yourself at that point?
I hated myself. I couldn't stand anything about my life for the first 38 plus years. So I didn't, you know what I mean? Just didn't. I used to do all the assault course and everything off my head just to prove that I am better than I am.
So you're doing these assault courses, you're putting your body through the trauma, literally day after day, doing lines and lines of coke, grams of coke.
Yeah.
But what made you sort of take the next step?
I've still not been able to remember it, but I turned up, it was a Friday morning, and I turned up a UPW event for Tony Robbins.
And for anyone that doesn't know that, it's one of Tony Robbins' large events he does, usually in London, and there's usually like 7,000 people having massive breakthroughs all over the place. I mean, I went a few years ago, and it changed my life as well.
It's amazing.
But this was actually a preview to it, so it was like a sell-up to go to the...
You should basically turn up in Manchester at this time for the preview it. I didn't have any money, so why I was there, I don't know. I still don't know now. All I know is that I remembered that one of my exes... gave me The Secret.
She said, the book,
because
The Secret.
She must have known that I was into my personal development anyway before I'd even started the personal development journey. So The Secret, I must have read that. And then I turned up at the event, off my head, sniffing coke in the toilet at the event. I'd come straight from work that night, September the 15th, 2017. Turned up, it was Alan Clenhans. Anybody?
Yes.
Yeah, Alan Clenhans.
I've interviewed Alan. Yes, I know. We know.
Amazing person. And he said at the end of it, and he told his story, and he'd done the upsell for it. Does anybody want to give their story while they're here? And subconsciously, my hand's gone up. I'm looking up and like, who'd have put that there? So I couldn't speak to the person next to me.
Because you're basically you're wired, right?
Wired.
You've been taking
I'd
coke.
I'd gone out of coke.
And you sat at this event.
Six espressos, necking espressos just to keep myself up. So I've stood up and said to 350 people in a room, I'm a cokehead, I'm off my head right now, and I want to stop. That was all I said. And round of applause, standing ovation.
Literally everyone stood up.
Yeah.
Well, they either thought you were a complete nutter or telling the truth, and you wouldn't, it's not something you'd lie about, right?
No. So,
I'm also off my head right now.
Yeah, not something you'd
So what did Alan say?
It was like the words, he'd never experienced that in his life before for somebody to stand up and say that and off the head then. And he's just like, this is going to change. This will help you change. And I don't think I believed it at the time because I didn't have money for a UPW ticket. I even asked if I could get one for nothing. I'll pay him a different time. Like, no, we can't do that. So I left the building. It was the Renaissance in Manchester, I think it was. I left there with no UPW ticket. And then... this is where it gets emotional because this is where my life changed. So I basically jumped in my old crappy D-Reg Peugeot, driving down the road. Best mate phones me. He says, what are you up to? Speaking. I said, well, I've been to this, but I can't afford this. Stick it on my credit card. So I've pretty much handbraked in the middle of the road, turned round and gone back to the event, paid for it with his credit card number because we phoned him when I got back. And then, so that day, it was my best mate, Michael Twigg, I want to mention on here anyway, Alan Clenans and Tony Robbins have saved my life. Because I could have left there and not spoke, and I could have gone and got more drugs.
Well, actually, you saved your life.
Yes, yeah.
They helped, they facilitated it.
They were
So, they were your guides.
Yeah.
But you saved your life.
So, because I've had a suicide attempt before, and it's my brother who saved my life with a phone call.
When did you try to commit suicide?
I think it was about 4 years ago. I had a recurring dream about walking into quicksand in Arnside or Ambleside in the Lake District.
Yeah.
I've seen this sign going to a 50th birthday, I think it was, with an XXX or whichever down the road it was. And I've seen this sign, and I had a big argument with a cousin when we were there. And then I've gone walking off. I've just walked off, and then 2 hours later, people can't find me. And I've left my phone on a chair at 11:30 at night. I've started walking out into the sea, and I thought, this is me done. Started walking out, because I've visioned this, I've dreamed it. And then all of a sudden, my phone rang, just in audible, you know, she just hear it. And it just clicked me out, and my brother phoned me randomly.
Dave.
He just like, I just feel like I phoned you. I was like, whoa. So, yeah, he just saved my life. Yeah. So,
and you were literally going to walk it into...
About 4 or 5 years ago, that, yeah. So... Oh,
okay, so going back to presumably you did UPW then.
I went to UPW. I was still on. It took me 7 months to come down properly from the addiction.
So did you go cold?
I went cold turkey.
I
didn't have any help. I didn't have any. I just stopped that day. So when I came back and I paid for the ticket, I was like, I just stopped. So from spending £1,000 to £1,500 a week at that time. Been off my head for 4 or 5 days in a row, no sleep, working on motorways, and stops, bang. So, and then it just all started to change. I was working on motorways for the last 2 years of working on motorways. I couldn't stand the job, couldn't stand it. So, from what it had turned into, it was all more health and safety and bothered about the money than the actual people. And I feel for the people who are in it's an amazing job, sort of thing, but it's not what it used to be. So I left in October, coming up to 2 years. I left my job. I was on an average of 40 to 50 grand a year in that job. I walked out of the job with no money, still in masses of debt, but to live my purpose.
And what is your purpose?
My purpose is to help people heal and help people become the lighthouse that I've become, the rock in the storm. Nothing can knock me now. Nothing. It's just like a bulletproof mind. Bulletproof body, and I can anything I put my mind to, I can see it already achieved. So I'm already there, and I want to help people get to that state through nutrition, through well-being, and through.
And you've changed it. I mean, you talk about nutrition. Mm. You've changed, like you say, you've lost lots of weight.
Yeah.
We've been talking this morning.
Two stone inflammation fell off me. From when I quit drugs, it's like just with my elbow, with my arm and stuff, which the
weather. Most people lose weight with cocaine because they're so wired. Yeah. But you
I was wired because of all the stress and the trauma in me as well. It was the inflammation. Yeah, I could have been, if I'd carried on, I could have been dead now, you never know. So, and it's just like, it all just came out of me and fell. So I used to have big round head, gangster fat in the back of me neck. So, yeah.
So what are your rituals now?
Now, I got myself a coach and I left my job. It fell with my dad and my brother because I was very controlled over my life as well for my dad and brother. They meant the best for me, but I had to have my own life. And from that, I left my job, walked into JB's mission, which was my business. JB's my nickname, so I've JB. Got, I've, yeah. So my mission was to open a, I was going to go down shop route first. So I started doing markets with a lot of products I bought. Absolutely brilliant up until February, March time, because I left in the October. And then by February, March the following year, after we'd had the Christmas period, my business fell apart. And this is where I actually hit rock bottom, because I didn't have anybody to talk to. Nobody knew where I was at. I was this face, I'm doing great. But from getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, building a business, I've gone to going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 10, 11 o'clock the next day, drinking the last of the beers that I had, eating the pizza, opening the curtains at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, walking to the shop, getting more beer.
So hang on a minute, you've been through all this trauma in your life, the drugs, the steroids, your mum dying, your failed relationships, and yet you say the biggest, like the hardest part of your life was when your business failed. That's actually quite something to say that, because people would have said, oh my God, you've been through all these different things that sound much worse.
Yeah.
But actually, you felt, because it's all about a feeling, how you feel as a person.
Yeah.
It was your business failing. Why Why do you think that was?
Because it's the first, probably the first thing I'd ever done on my own without the feeling of, because I didn't speak to my dad and brother for over a year. And it was because it was the feeling that I'd done something myself and I built it to say, fuck the pair of you, sort of thing. And that's being nice at the time. But then, and I'm doing my own thing. So for me to sort of build my own thing and then go, it's gone.
Did you feel like a failure?
Massively. I said to me, I didn't feel suicidal, I didn't feel down, but I said to myself that if I'd have gone there and then, I would have blown my head off that morning.
And you know now there isn't any such thing as failure, right?
There isn't at all. No, it's you either win learning. Or you learn.
Yeah.
You either win or you learn, 100%. So so from that, I put an ad on Facebook. I went to the pub for basically all you can drink coffee. I had £1.59 to my name. That was it, I didn't have anything. And coffee was £1.79 for drink, as much as you want. So I went there with my laptop, put an ad on Facebook and said, I can do gardening, I can do this, you know, gardening, painting, stuff like that. 800 quid worth of work by the end of the day.
So literally from £1, whatever it was, over 59, you had
basic failure, I had to change my view on life. I had to change the way I was, I had to change it. I did it in a split second. And that was me like, right, well, I've hit rock bottom. I've been the crushed tennis ball and now I'm springing back up. And this is where it's going to start to count. And since that day, because I'm living more my true purpose, I mean, I'm setting up a coaching business. I'm setting up a nutrition business. I want to be a speaker. Well, I am a speaker. I just want the opportunity to go to the stage. And I've been offered to work with a mental health charity as well.
Tell me about that, actually. Yeah. That's really interesting. So you're now going to be an ambassador or...?
Yeah, I'm going to be the head of mental health for BU. Amazing charity, yeah. And the way that I was actually in a music video called Demons by Ian Lawton. Absolutely amazing tune. And I was the drug dealer demon in it. And because I was the drug dealer... People were sort of very sceptical about me, sort of thing. Oh, he's a drug dealer, sort of thing. So I didn't really... I opened up as me. And then because I opened up as me and the person I was, I ended up being really good friends with the person who started the charity. And she said, listen, amazing story, you're an amazing person. Will you work with us in the future? So my future will be going around schools and working with them and doing talks about mental health for children as well.
I mean, I met you for the first time this morning, and I've got to say, John, your energy is just infectious. I can see you going on and doing amazing things. I can feel it, and I'm quite perceptive. What would you say if there's people watching this that maybe you're going through a similar situation to your past? Maybe there's people sat here, they're using coke. Cocaine, they want to kick the habit but they don't know where to start, or maybe they're in that situation of just that spiral of negativity and you feel like your life's going downhill. Is there any advice you could give them or any words of wisdom to how?
Just do the best to break the pattern. You will naturally go through times of when you're going to try and break the pattern naturally anyway, but you won't pick up on them because it's about your levels of consciousness. So the more you become conscious of what you're actually doing. And say if you turn to drink because of a situation, you beat yourself up for having the drink. If you start to celebrate yourself becoming conscious of having that drink instead of it being sleeping, awake and subconscious, celebrate the notice in it. Don't look at what you've not done. The tiny things that I celebrate for. I used to have a really bad addiction from standing in the kitchen because I used to spend hours in the kitchen. So my subconscious, my body would take me to the kitchen and I'd be like, oh God, stood in the kitchen again. I can't produce if I'm not sat in my chair. The other day, I wanted to do something in my kitchen and my body took me to my seat.
Because you were stopped beating yourself up.
I've changed the habit and I've stopped beating myself up from it. So if you start to become aware and celebrate the tiny bits of awareness, the little things, the tiniest things, and then you will start to break habits because you need to change your personality to change your personal reality. So to change, you need to become a different person. And this is what I've become an expert in my own life, because I haven't got a piece of paper to say you can do it. I can do it because I'm doing it.
I can see you do it. Yeah. And I've talked to you and I can hear the depth.
Just from waking up this morning, I'm a different person to what I was yesterday because I create my future. I don't create from the familiar past.
If someone wants to get in contact with you, if they really resonate with your story and they want some help, how do they go about contacting you?
I've recently set up a nutrition business, JB's Nutrition. It's JAYBWES.
We'll put it down in the show notes. Yes.
JB's Nutrition. I've just started this website. I wouldn't mind somebody's helping me, and it's amazing. And so I've got a little coaching part on there. Have a read of the coaching bit. And my email is John Martin Conscious Coach.
Okay, we're going to put all of that as well.
And then I've got a couple other emails, but I'll stick to that. And then all my social media as well is JB's Nutrition.
JB's Nutrition.
And I've got massive ambition in life, and none of it is to serve me; it's to serve the world.
I can feel you serving.
To serve everyone else.
So you've got to this point. Everything that's happened in your life. It's all happened for a reason. However traumatic, horrible it sounds, it's led you to the person you are today, a beautiful human being, and I can feel your energy and your soul. Mm. We've come to our last question, and I'm really gutted because I really enjoyed this interview.
We'll definitely do a follow-up interview.
Absolutely.
So much the fill in the gaps.
Absolutely, we definitely will. Yeah. So my last question, I ask this to all my guests is, if you were to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find, what would that message be?
Ask yourself one question right now, and that question is, what you are doing right now, will your future self thank you for it?
Lovely.
So, yeah. And it's, yeah, because if you're not doing something to your future self, then you're not progressing, you're not going forward, so you're stuck. So...
John, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you. Yeah, top. Amazing.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday. So hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.